둘, 셋, 파!
For Hey Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Hello, and welcome to Long Time No See, the podcast. Each week, we'll be pairing two blindfolded comedians who've agreed to sit down with a mystery guest. I'll be putting them on the spot with a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Without further ado, please remove your blindfolds and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Michael.
Hi, Andrea.
I have to be honest with you, I am so relieved to see it's you.
Do you have any irrational fears? What's the worst fad you were into? Is there any job that you would be terrible at?
Underwater welder?
Don't say that about yourself.
Do you guys have any useless talents?
I kicked one of those delivery robots.
Got what? You kicked one?
Yelling. I kick those all the time.
They have names on them.
Good.
I can make smoke come out of my mouth with nothing.
Do it.
You want to see it?
What the f***? Are you a dragon?
Out now, Long Time No See, the podcast, season 2. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out, it's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer, and then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead, download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith with the interview series presented by WFPK, Independent Louisville, at WFPK.org, Consequence of Sounds, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Hello to all the subscribers. Thank you all for checking out the series every single week with new episodes every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Appreciate you listening every single time leaving comments wherever you're listening from. If you haven't already, please give the series a rating, leave a review, you know, the usual things that you ask for in a podcast. If you're not a subscriber, please do hit that subscribe button right now, too. Of course, you can do it anywhere you get your favorite podcast from, like iTunes, and Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, and YouTube, Acast, Stitcher, Podchaser, etc., etc. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, Palisa. I'm going to be talking with Chani about the new record, When We Stay Alive. Now, this is a record with a very interesting backstory, a very scary backstory to a point. Just over a year ago, Chani was on her roof, as she will tell you, and she fell like 10 feet and was basically paralyzed for a long time and luckily recovered. But half the record written before then, half the record afterwards, a lot of the songs speak to two very different points in her life. And we're going to get the whole story on that, what happened, how it affected the songwriting, and how the characters within the songs, you know, herself, kind of develops and changes throughout. But there's a bigger picture to it, too. With the words, When We Stay Alive, does mean something very personal, but there's something in the bigger cultural context as well. And you don't have to think too hard to figure out exactly what that is. She's also a fantastic collaborator with Aaron Dessner and Justin Vernon, which as a big collective is like over 100 artists in this thing. It really kind of changes the idea of what a band can be. And Chani will tell us how that actually affects her songwriting on this record specifically. We'll hear about teaming up with Boys Noize, singing with Lane 8, backing up Swamp Dog, as well as the stories behind some of these singles like Driving and Trash in Bed and Steady. So let's get into it, talking about the record When We Stay Alive. It's Kyle Meredith with Polisa.
Yeah, this is Chani Lana.
I got to tell you how much in love with the new record I am, When We Stay Alive. It's cool music. It's fun music. It's dark music. It's sad music. It's sort of everything I want in an album. I know it's got a heavy backstory, and I figure we would touch on that, because with a title like When We Stay Alive, this is something that I feel like it probably means a lot of different things, both personal and in the bigger context. But in the personal story, it traces back at least half of the record from a fall, right?
Yeah, it was about a year ago. So now at this point, I'm like, you know, kind of over it, because I did my work kind of processing it. And I'm kind of like, I don't know, was it that big of a deal? But yeah, at the time, it was a big deal. I fell from my roof doing some classic Minnesota winter housework. And I, you know, at first couldn't walk, and then did some physical therapy and wore a brace for about 3 months, and I'm really back in full use of my body. And but yeah, it was a lot at the time. And but what it did do is I was kind of like not really making time for music, and then all of a sudden I had time to write. So it made it so that we got this record done.
Yeah.
I wasn't really that interested in rushing it or really prioritizing it, I guess.
So when you're in a moment like that, you know, paralyzed for the moment, I mean, and you do start thinking of music, does it start coming from a different angle than what you're used to?
It came from a place of some freedom, in that I tend to be really anxious, like many people, and I deal with that by working, and I always have something to do. And so suddenly I didn't have the ability to do anything. And for me, I can be creative when I feel like I'm stable and I've taken care of other things that needed to happen. Because it's always been a kind of a cathartic thing that has been for me. And so I always feel like I have to take care of the necessary things. And I started to see it as the only thing I could do for a bit. And so I got to have this gift of quieting down everything else. And I'm not being able to like lift anything or, you know, cook or like even really go outside, because it was so very snowy and icy. And so I just had to, I could be quiet and just make music my job in a way that I didn't really feel was warranted before this. I just kind of gave me the freedom to like do music without being thinking that I should be doing something else. And so I took it, you know, like, I focused on trying to be really intentional with it and try new things. So from that sense, it was similar, where I was trying to take each song from a different angle, or, you know, make it, like when I was writing the song B again, I tried to make it like, you know, what does it feel like when you make writing a song like a ceremony or like a ritual on you? And what does it feel like sometimes when you're kind of like silly and just sort of like, you're writing, you know, about a different person or a different personality than you usually exist in, which is kind of like fold up. And where I tend to live as somebody who's kind of like, I don't need anything. Like, I'm very like self-reliant to a fault. So in fold up, it's kind of like this sort of different personality. It's kind of like I'm lonely and I get what I give, and I'm kind of like, I'm in this position because I'm just kind of like a whiny, needy. So yeah, just kind of trying to see each song from a different angle. Some of that involved like seeing my situation from a different angle, and believing that it didn't matter that it happened anymore. And I was at that point of healing where I was ready to explore like how that worked in all different areas of my life. What happened to me mentally and to me physically when I was moving on and embodying my life as if stories that used to even slightly hold some kind of like identity for me never happened. And they had, you know, absolutely no hold on my life, even as saying like, oh, that thing happened and then I survived it. But what happens when I take this idea of like, it doesn't even matter that it happened, and where I am now and being present and what I'm going to do with just where I am now, you know, what do I have to say about that?
Yeah, I've heard you, or maybe read you saying it's in a way like rewriting your own history.
Yeah, and that was kind of a revolutionary idea to me, because I think there is some importance, and I think it's really a personal thing and everybody has to do what they need to do. But, you know, even just little things where we find identity in surviving something, even that for me started to wear me down. Or as my doctor that I was seeing, you know, pointed out, that I'm still kind of holding on to in that, like, some regret and shame that something's happened. Like, what happens if I, like, just completely rewrite the story that I went up on the roof, but then, like, you know, my partner came out and was like, hey, what are you doing? Let's, you know, get down from there, you know, like, or like I just like fell into a big cloud of snow and, you know, some magical fairies picked me up. And just like, what is the importance of a reality in the future and now, like in the past reality? Like, what? And it was kind of an experiment, you know. If people ask me what happened, I'm not like, nothing, or, you know, I'm also not that dramatic that I completely lived in my own rewriting for my own, you know. But, you know, being able to exist in this world and not is kind of where I like to try to be.
Can we all, like, as a nation, do that whole exercise come like mid-November? Is that something we go
full on? Exactly. Exactly. I mean, you have to have some of that to be active and involved and saying, like, there is hope. There is a hope that things can get better. And that is a little bit like forgetting a bit about what has happened in our history as a country and in this world as humans, you know. It's like a little bit, you have to forget a little bit about what we've done, and only with the purpose of believing that it's possible for us to improve. I mean, and care about each other more than ourselves.
And I guess that's where the dual play of that title, When We Stay Alive, comes through, because on one hand, it, you know, it's like, is it hopeful? Is it cautionary? And is it everything at once?
Yeah, I think it is that thing where it is sort of like everything is political. Everything is, you know, it has a lot of different meanings for me. You know, it has a lot of different meanings for me. I tend to be very like, very future driven, very like the end is coming. But I'm also a parent, so I can't share that with my children. But how do you turn it on its head for yourself and look at it from a different direction, that, okay, well, what if this catastrophe does happen? What if Trump does get elected again? And then, but we're all still here, mm-hmm. You know, well, what are we going to do then? Or, you know, what if, you know, half of the world does go up in flames and then some people are left, and, you know, what are we going to do? And so if you live in that doomsday, I remember when I was growing up, there was like a movement in the kind of in the evangelical or kind of far right, where it was like, it doesn't matter if you recycle or litter, because this isn't our home. Like, we're all going to heaven if you believe in Christ, you know, doesn't matter what we do to this earth. And that kind of mindset that kind of permeates even non-religious people, like, it doesn't matter what happens, because I'm leaving this world, either in death or whatever. And so I don't care what happens. But how do you think about, you know, what about when the people, you know, thinking about, yeah, what happens if you don't die, or if, you know, we're here after this catastrophe and you have to keep living? And so instead of thinking about the worst, thinking about, like, a little less, you know, dramatically, like, death will save us, and instead, like, what about life, and what are you going to do with your life?
It's interesting. I've never thought of the context, like, coping mechanisms in songwriting. It's kind of like a first that I can think of.
Anyway. I mean, I've written so many songs for me. Mm. I mean, I look back and I'm like, man, I've written a lot of songs. So I got to keep it interesting for myself. And I'm always trying to figure things out in songs and in writing.
Well, there's it seems to be another angle on exactly that right there, because you've been a part of the, I don't know if there's a proper way to say this, the 37D, 03D collective.
Yeah.
And this is with Justin and Aaron Desner. And this collective, you know, I've talked with Aaron about this before, about it, the idea of it almost seems to me like it changes what a band is, what it means to be any sort of band, like a fluid version of something like that. And I was wondering, like, has that affected your songwriting in that way?
Well, it affected it in this record in the sense that usually Ryan was my main producer that I was speaking to. And he and I have a special relationship musically, because it's like I usually just sort of, he's a musician. Like if he sends me a track, I just know what to do to it. And I just like, I know what to say to it. And we kind of are, I feel like I'm responding to him and he responds back to me. And then this record, he had like 12 or 13 other people collaborating with him on the tracks. And I knew all of them well from people, or not well, some of them, but I knew them. And so getting used to these other voices, and then it was like I was speaking back and responding to different people than I had, you know, more of like a collective, literally in the songwriting. And for me, that was a big deal because it's such a personal experience for me. The people that I make music with, I often get very close to, which is why I've married two of them. And it's something that I really fight against, but it's like, I try to fight, you know, with that in myself and put it at bay so that I can, and I've gotten better at it as I get older, so that it was a really interesting experience for me this time to really, like, there's a song called Fuel Life that's pretty much the basis of it is a song that Andrew Broder wrote from Fog, and it's really like his voice. That's not a song that Ryan would write, like a piano tune like that. And then Ryan added himself and his voice onto it. But I think it's open, that experience of working with people has kind of opened me up a little bit to collaborating with people in real time as somebody who is really shy and doesn't really make, I'm not a mover and a shaker or a networker. Like it takes me a while to be able to open up. But as I get older and through experiences like people where you're put into a space and you have only a week and you don't want to leave having done nothing, you know, people are giving you the opportunity to make something and take care of you while you're there, you know, room and board. And then in exchange, you make music. It kind of pushes me, and it pushed me to try to be braver about working with people that I didn't know. And then for the pure, you know, none of it was going to be recorded or sold or, you know, I guess it's up on people now, but it was just for the pure act of making, which I really love. And that I think, you know, this past couple years, then Police have made like two other records with Dustin Sun and Task Force, you know, and a lot of it was just like getting used to and comfortable with just making stuff that will probably never come out, or making stuff that, for just the act of making it, that will then inform the stuff that you're going to make in the future. So I think that fit in line with how Police has operated in a lot of ways in the past of making with people outside of even the People Collective, but just making music with friends, as that's sort of the beginning of Police and what we started doing and kind of how we've carried. But we really opened up to more people after the collective festivals in Berlin over the past 3 or 4 years. So it kind of, yeah, it just broadened our horizon, and for me shook me out a little bit of feeling timid and don't want to impose or think that, you know, anybody wants to work with me. It kind of got me out of like, just giving it a try.
We definitely hear, you know, some new sounds all throughout this record. I mean, I don't know if Steady feels as different to you as it does to me. That's kind of one of them that I hear. But even the B-side to Driving, which I'm in love with, that song Trash in Bed, and that's you mm-hmm. working with Boys Noize, right?
Yeah, he was gracious enough to kind of help tune it in the end. And that was one of the first songs we wrote for this record. And that was a couple, maybe like 2.5 years ago, because that was something that we toured with in Europe about 2 years ago. We played like 6 of the songs on the record just to like try them out and try this new drum setup we were doing, see if it was a good idea to go. That was kind of what we were aiming for the rest of the songs to sound, to move more in that like techno direction, with all loving that music, and that's not where the record went. and so that's why that song, yeah, it's kind of a standalone. Alex is awesome, and I sang on Mayday on his record a couple records ago, and Dustin Zahn produced a song with Ryan on this record that also, you know, was like we wanted to work with Dustin and make some techno songs, and they ended up being just like is like techno producers, they want to make non-techno songs.
Right, right.
You know, they wanted, and Dustin wanted a break from making like club music and making some songs with me that were, yeah, you know, just like songs, first chorus, bridge. So it's just been really fun to just see where, because that's what's so wonderful about making music is you know, it pulls the stuff that's inside of you out, and it tells you, you know, what you're going to make. And it's exciting or interesting, at least, to see what comes out of people. But
yeah. I mean, you're all over the even the new Lane 8 record, Brightest Lights, and what's mm-hmm. it's like 2, 3, or 4 some odd songs on that one. With it being like someone else's record, you know, in these collaborations that you're talking like Mayday and that song and everything. I mean, do you feel as close to those songs as something that would be on just a Police record, or is it sort of something completely different?
It is. It's very different, but I still care deeply about it. Like, those Lane 8 songs are some of my favorite songs that I've written because, one, the experience was so great, and it's vastly different where I'm in a room with Daniel and this other person named Kyle, who Kyle and I wrote a song together, Brightest Light, that was the lead single on the last Lane 8 record, and where, you know, when I write with Police, no one ever says like, oh, I wouldn't sing the verse like that, or why don't we try a different word? You know, I just have free reign to say what I want to say and how I want to say it. And I, you know, I edit my lyrics over and over again for, you know, a year or so, but it's a really good challenge. And it's to go into a studio with Lane 8, for instance, where, you know, people are gonna give me suggestions and challenge the way I sing and challenge the way I write, and that informs me so much when I go back and work on my own stuff. Because when I'm in my own community, which is, you know, really like my family, we all just kind of leave each other alone. And that produces its own, has its own good qualities about it. That then you're kind of just sincerely who you are and able with your flaws. And then when you're working with other people, that will point those things out because they're seeing you kind of for the first time. Yeah, I really enjoy both of them. I really love writing for other people and kind of being challenged by people I don't know, you know, who are free to be objective with me and aren't, their ears aren't kind of like used to the way I do things, and so it kind of wakes me up out of my habits, and but study is kind of interesting because I think that really comes out of Ryan's work, working a lot in Nashville on a couple Swamp Dog records, and because it does have this sort of broken down kind of country hint mm-hmm. in a weird way, mm-hmm. and I think that was, it came out of that.
And worth mentioning, you're on the new Swamp Dog record as well.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Very, 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 yeah. Yeah, lately.
She's everywhere.
singing backups. And that's how I first got to know Ryan, was singing backups in gangs. And I love singing harmony. Like, I think that's the best.
Now, I don't know the timeline of, like, say, the, you know, Swamp Dog, or of course that's backup, maybe that's not the right one, but it's like Lane 8. I don't know the timeline of you recording that one versus when you're doing When We Stay Alive, but you know, when an artist is writing in such a, you know, small amount, you get the same themes, and that's sort of how records happen, I guess. But do these songs speak to the same emotions that you're speaking to? Like, did the Lane 8 song speak to the same emotions that you're speaking to from When We Stay Alive?
I think that I do. That's probably another fun thing, is I do try to specifically not write about myself when I'm writing for other people. And the timeline is really interesting. And I think another reason why I loved working on those songs is I was at such a place of just kind of, just a really low place when I went to record for Lane 8. It was over my birthday a year ago. And it was literally 10 days before I fell. And Daniel flew me out to Denver. And I was just at a place where I was like, I have to find another job. I was working as a nursing assistant, but very depressed, for lack of a better word. And I got there and I wrote with him for a week, and I felt so alive, and I was just like awake. I didn't have to, like, you know, pound coffee or caffeine all day. I was like, my heart was beating. I was writing. I was writing love songs. that were, you know, mostly sweet and not really the kind of stuff that I write, but, you know, trying to fit the song, and I was really enjoying it. And I left that being like, you know, even if I don't, this isn't like my career, I really, this music really is something that I should do because I really do enjoy it. And it's one of those things when you know, like, you're sweating and your heart's beating and you feel awake and time is moving, but you don't feel like it even is. You're like, those are the kind of things that are called, I think, your passions, or, you know, things that you should do because they bring you life and energy. And I left that feeling that way. So that was a really positive trip for me, because I'd been feeling really like I couldn't find my lighthouse. I couldn't find what I was supposed to do. So that was that timeline. And before that, I had written, you know, a year before that, I was writing like Steady and Forget Me Now and Trash in Bed. And it was after and starting in the spring of 2019 that I started writing like Driving, Be Again, Feel Life, Sold Up. So some of those qualities are different too, because some of them, the ones after the spring, were sung in my room, in my house, and then the ones before were sung at a friend's studio. So
I'm really hearing how the two parts of your life, I don't know if it sounds like that to you, hearing how the author sounds before an event and after the events, and how it makes a complete album.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. And they all kind of still work together, because, you know, as it's not like the accident really changed the core of me. And I still, you know, I unfortunately did not become like completely always grateful and always, you know, rosy and always looking at life as I should. But it really did inform me, and still really does.
Well, I think you've made beautiful art once again with this record. I honestly can't say enough great things about it when we stay alive. Jenny, thank you for the music, and especially thank you for the conversation today. This has been really, really fun.
Okay, well, thank you so much. Have a great day.
All right, take care. Bye.
Yep, bye.
My thanks to Channy. The new Palisa record is called When We Stay Alive. It is fantastic. Do check it out. And my thanks to you for listening to the interview and checking out the series. Again, if you're not already a subscriber, I hope you do that before you get out of here by hitting the subscribe button wherever you're listening from right now, including YouTube, Spotify, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Acast, Stitcher, Podchaser, NPR.org, any of those places. And if you already are, and you can leave a rating or a review, it's always extremely helpful as well. After that, head to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. It's an hour full of song premieres, music news, anniversary spins, and bonus interviews. Again, that's WFPK.org. ConsequenceOfSound.net has your music and film news. You can also find me on social media, any of the platforms, at Kyle Meredith. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
I'm Lior Phillips, host of This Must Be the Gig. We're a weekly podcast that documents everything about the world of live music. Speaking with choreographers, costume and set designers, the people who run beloved venues and festivals, and, of course, speaking with musicians about that one gig that changed their lives. Get your peek behind the curtain at consequenceofsound.net, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.